Fantasy Sports Today.
The big Harmony's athletic.
Welcome, everybody. It's the Fantasy Sports Today. Yes, it is Fantasy Sports Today.
I see Jake. I can't hear you.
With myself, Emery Hunt at F Ball Game Plan, and Elliot Chris at Elliot Chris, only one L in that name, which is special today. It's not just your typical FSD. Sorry for all your baseball, because it is the NFL draft preview from a fantasy perspective. You guys ready to do this?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I want a little more excitement than that, Emery. Come on, you've been around here before. Oh, so you're trying to get set up over there.
Yeah, we're trying to give my man Elliot's mic, our headset working.
His mic's shenanigans.
I can't hear you.
He can't hear him. Can't hear you, man. Can't hear your beautiful voice.
We can hear Elliot. We just can't hear. He can't hear us. Is that the problem?
Yeah, I don't think Elliot can hear you.
Look at this. Oh, I'll talk to you for a moment here. Then, how about that?
Yeah, that'll work.
Where's your super nice suit getup? I was expecting some nice like red or.
Oh no, nah, we
you're kind of casual.
Yeah, kind of casual today. I didn't want to come in with a suit and then throw everybody off. You know.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to upstage us.
I don't want to upstage. It's not my show, you know, so it's your show. So I feel as though I let you, you know, you tend to do a good job of dressing well, you know. So I was like, let me just try to, you know, bum it out a little bit, you know.
I'm just in a shirt and hoodie. I'm not especially that. So, but hey, Emery, how did you enjoy being out there as much as you were? Because I know you went to a lot of different locations in the offseason already so far to actually see these things in person, like the Shrine Game and all that type of stuff. How did you enjoy this offseason? So
I love getting out there, man. It started a little bit earlier for me this year because I was on the broadcast for the Tropical Bowls, which was in Daytona Beach. So I was able to get out there first, then made my travels to the Shrine Game, then to the Senior Bowl, and then to the Combine. I love being out because all season long, you know, I'm at a game, I'm in here on a Sunday, and this is my chance to really get caught up on the prospects because of my schedule during the season. I don't really get to get, really dive into the tape. And so it starts with the January circuit, the All-Star Game circuit, and I absolutely love it.
All right, well, real quick before we dive into all this, well, I know why. And like I said, everybody can follow you at F-Ball Game Plan. He is the czar of the playbook. So tell everybody where your background is and why you're the... I'll say, of all the minds out there, except for mine, you guys are probably two of the ones I hold in the highest regards when it comes to rookies. So tell everybody why I think it's the case.
Well, for me, it's all about just, you know, trusting what you see and just speaking to what you've watched all season long. And you know, my background, I played college football at University of Louisiana, home of the Raging Cajuns. Shout out to Ambassador Caffrey Street. Those down there know what I'm talking about. So I enjoyed my Raging Cajun time. I coached after I got out of college and now started in Football Game Plan in 2007. This will be 11 years running, and you know, we've just done it, you know, the best, better than everybody else, I like to say.
That's going to be tough.
Elliot, you up and running over there?
Yeah, that's going to be tough.
We got you over here. Yeah.
That's going to be tough for me to follow up. I mean, my football career lasted about 3 games in 8th grade till my leg shattered. So that's my football playing career. But, you know, a few years ago, I got a job with Pro Football Focus and, you know, just immersed myself in everything, trying to study from film to data to constantly learn from other people and improve my process. I've been doing it myself for about 5 to 6 years now. No one's really cared until the last two. But, you know, I've been nailing prospects and people have been respecting it. And, you know, I have the Draft Daily podcast where I have a new guest on every single day to break down a different prospect. So, you know, that's really helped me improve my process and learn what to look for and what matters most in today's NFL.
All right, so here we go. That everybody knows, you should be following both of these guys on Twitter. As I just said, at F-Ball Game Plan, at Elliot Christ, 1L, both terrific minds as myself. My draft rankings, my prospect rankings are on the site right now. For everybody, you can go read those, but we're going to jump into those. Quarterbacks and running backs today. Come back Thursday, we're going to do wide receivers and tight ends. Heck, we might not even get to all the running backs today. We'll see if we have to carry any over. But here's the first question before we even get to the quarterbacks, fellas. All right, is this draft class going to be the best quarterback draft class basically since 2004, because it's funny. This is what everybody was saying during the football season last year was, oh, this quarterback draft class is loaded. Haven't seen one like this in years. Might even be better than 2004. Now, what we see, what happens in the offseason all the time, people start to throw other things out there and, oh, well, maybe it's not that good. You see coaches out there in the NFL saying one quarterback's even going to be relevant in 5 years, and that's Sam Darnold. Where do you fall when it comes to these quarterbacks?
You know, for me, I think that's just a false statement, you know, and we can always look at the top. You know, let's just look at last year's draft class. You had Pat Mahomes, you had Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer. Those are the headliners, right? And let's look at the depth of that class. Guys like Mitchell Trubisky, guys like, let's say, a Philip Walker, who's at Temple, who's now with the Indianapolis Colts. You also look deeper down. You have guys like a Brad Kaye, who's still finding his way on the roster, Alec Torgerson. So I think when you look at that class juxtaposed to what we have this year, I think the top is decent enough to where you can say, okay, yeah, they got some good players at the top, but I don't think the depth is here as people are making it out to be. There were small college guys last year that I thought were phenomenal. We were kind of scrapping for something at the East-West Shrine Game. Last year, you had a lot of good players at the East-West Shrine Game. This year, you was like, maybe it's JT Barrett is the best quarterback out here. I don't think this class is as deep as last year's.
What do you think? Elliot, the same thing, is the top end, in your opinion, at least, that will get like 3 to 4 relevant guys for the next 5 years?
Yeah, I mean, I love Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen. I'm not a Josh Allen guy at all. Big Lamar Jackson guy as well. I think Mason Rudolph's got some talent. I think Kyle Laletta, speaking of a small school guy, you know, he's a really accurate quarterback. You know, I think anytime you get more than three guys that you anticipate being good NFL players, you're off to a pretty good quarterback class. I think last year, Watson and Trubisky and Mahomes stack up with the top three guys this year. But I think Baker Mayfield is the most accurate quarterback that's come out in the past couple classes. And I think there's the top end guys can stack up against any other class, so I think that's why the hype is there. And, you know, the Josh Allen stuff, he adds to the fifth quarterback. I'm not a fan, and I don't think, Emery, you're a fan either, but Josh Allen's hype adds to the hype of the class as well.
Well, let's go to him, because originally I was going to start with Sam Darnold, but let's talk about Josh Allen real quick, because I'm not a fan. I actually even joked about him in the article that, like I said, is on Roto Experts today. I don't understand where it's coming from. Everybody talk about, look at the arm strength, look at the ability, look at the athleticism. He's got the body, everything. Like, Emery, this is the one thing, and I know he was a little bit smaller of a guy, but I think you'll remember what I'm going to go for with this comparison is I kept saying throughout last season and even up to today, I keep saying this was the same thing everybody wanted to say about Kyle Bowler. And look what happened to Kyle Bowler. Now, is Josh Allen even more athletically talented, even with a bigger arm? That's very possible. But at the same time, I don't want to mock the guy completely. But when people say you can't teach certain things, I went out there and I said you can't teach stupid. I just don't think he's a smart quarterback.
Yeah, here's the thing with Allen, man. And I like the comparison of Bowler. I think you can take Bowler's arm strength and Jake Locker's athleticism, and you put them together, and you got Josh Allen. Now, I'm not going to say Allen is completely terrible. However, at some point, you have to produce, and that goes for the high school level. That goes for the collegiate level, both JUCO and at Wyoming. At some point, you have to show that, hey, this guy can play. And I think his career is very similar to what we saw from Jake Locker. At no point during his Washington career was Locker good. His team had, I believe, one bowl season. There were a time they were 1-11 or 1-10, something like that. Wyoming has been the same thing, and I hate that people call Wyoming a small college. No, Wyoming is an FBS program, which means they're one of, 125 or 130 now FBS teams. These are high-quality athletes, and at some point, you got to get out there and prove it, and we've only seen it in spurts, which is why I say you probably have to keep a guy like him on a pitch count, so to speak, maybe 20 passes a game. Anything over 20 passes a game, that's when the fun starts for the defense, because that's when everything starts to get crazy and you're starting to find yourself picking off passes.
Yeah, I think Allen's got a lot of issues. I think the best comparison I heard for him was Ryan Howard of The Office, where he's kind of this wunderkind, but no one actually knows what he's good at. Like, Josh Allen's got the huge arm and he's got the athleticism, and I think arm strength in general, when you evaluate a quarterback, is probably the most overrated trait, because at a certain point, it's the differences don't really make much of a difference. So with Allen, I think he's got bad footwork. I don't think he throws with anticipation. I think he struggles to go through his reads. And, you know, the thing I'm looking for most is how you handle big moments. And he was terrible against big-time competition. I mean, sub 50% completion against the six best teams he ever played with 13 interceptions in six games. That's really bad. You know, people say, well, his help wasn't good enough. I think that's a pretty lame answer. You're a quarterback. You're supposed to elevate these guys, right, if you're going to be this first overall pick. And then on top of that, you know, when he did have the NFL guys, I mean, Hill went to the Falcons, right, and was it Hollister went to the Bears, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are two NFL guys, and his completion percentage was still 56%. In JUCO, it was 49%. In high school, it was 50%. This guy's never completed passes. I mean, even if you talk about the Senior Bowl stuff, he's missing the net by 15 yards. That's not good. So I really don't understand the hype. If you want to take the guy in the third or fourth round and say he's got the athletic upside with the arm strength and maybe we can kind of figure everything out, I'd get it. But, you know, he's miles behind Patrick Mahomes, who people didn't like as a first-round prospect last year. He's got a lot of similar issues with Kaiser without nearly the good tape. So I don't understand why he's in the top five consideration at all.
No, that's what I'm saying. So what I did in my draft, right, I said, you know, people always talk about fitting in tight windows. I said he could fit it in a peephole, but can he hit the door? Like, yeah. That's the problem. It's like, who knows if he can even make it there. So, all right, Emery, well, let's go back to the top, because if it's not Josh Allen, as some people have, usually the second highest quarterback, if not the first highest quarterback for people, is Sam Darnold. Is he the best NFL quarterback in your position, in your opinion, and for fantasy? Because I think I know the second answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
No. And here's why. What's interesting about Sam Darnold is, you know, people, let's say Browns fans, they clowned DeShone Kizer last year as a rookie, made his mistakes, played up and down, had some good stretches and had some bad stretches. And now you all of a sudden want Sam Darnold, who led the nation in turnovers, both interceptions and fumbles over those last two seasons. What kind of sense that makes? Now, I will say this. He does have good upside. I like him a little bit more than Rosen, because he has what people like to call, which you just talked about, the it factor. But I think his it factor is his ability to overcome mistakes, get himself out of a jam, and forget the fact that he is, you know, supposed to be a statue in the pocket. He could get out there and scramble. So all of that, you know, when you put it together, along with his ability to make throws in tight situations, how he handles pressure, I think all of that is a plus for him. So I, from a fantasy perspective, I don't see him being a fantasy guy, because he doesn't have the upside trait of someone that, let's say, like a Lamar Jackson, that trump card that you can play. Okay, he can get out there and run. You know, but it just makes sense. I can only be honest. But Rosen, Donald, I believe, has, if I was to project him, if he was to start as a rookie, he'd be probably a, you know, 23-12 type of a guy. And I don't think that's good fantasy numbers for a rookie.
If we're going to go fantasy, I don't think Darnold's in the top two. Darnold's my third overall quarterback. I think he's got a lot of upside. I think he's got a lot of things that he does real well, and some things that worry me. So I basically say he's Aaron Rodgers meets Blake Bortles. And so I guess that's a spectrum comparison, but it's also the fact that, you know, here's this guy that can make throws at any level of the field, is really good on the move, but his mechanical issues are legitimate. His footwork is bad. His motion is loopy. He gets locked in his first read a lot, a little bit similar to DeShone Watson, where he trusts his pre-snap read a ton, and then he'll get him into some trouble. You know, he came onto the scene amazingly well, and then how you adjust the next year when defensive coordinators are making you the focus of their offseason, I think, is a huge telling trait for a quarterback. And, you know, Darnold struggled with some of that, especially weeks 4 through 7. He was really legitimately bad. If you throw on that tape, most people don't watch that tape. If you throw on that tape, it's scary tape. And then, you know, he rebounded at the end and had a weaker bowl game. But I think Darnold's got a lot of traits that you look for in a quarterback. But I do think he's got some running upside, nowhere near the upside of Lamar Jackson, obviously, who we'll talk about in a minute. But I think he's probably quarterback 3 for fantasy.
All right, well, because I know who you guys' favorites are, and we're going to talk about each one, but one more before we get to him. I think this will be just a quick hit, unless you guys got some additional, you know, factors you want to throw in here. Can we all agree? Maybe we don't, and that's why I want to ask it. Can we all agree that the best pure pocket passer is Josh Rosen, Emery?
I don't know what that even means. You know, I think when they show Josh Rosen, they only show him pre-snap and drop back and set up. and they never show the end result of the play. Because he's just as bad as Darnold when you talk about turnovers and getting lazy. And I just think, you know, pure. I try to stay away from those labels because at the end of the day, can you complete passes? You know, pure pocket pass. I don't even know what that looks like. So Rosen, I think, you know, maybe if they draw it up.
It looks like a guy standing in the pocket throwing the football.
That's what they like to say, man. If that's the case, then, you know, if you just show the drop back and then the release – you could say that about Josh Allen, you know, pure pocket passer. So Rosen, I think, is a guy that just, okay, he's decent. And some people say Matt Ryan. I don't think that. Matt Ryan has a little bit more athleticism, I believe, than Rosen did. To me, Rosen is a little bit like Eli Manning, and that's both good and bad.
I actually like that Eli Manning comp a lot. Matt Waldman was talking to me about him, and I thought he had a perfect comparison for him. Like, if Josh Rosen's a technician, right, like he's got really good mechanics, and that's where you get the in the pocket stuff and the pocket passer and all that stuff. But, you know, if he was a boxer, he'd be a technician, but he wants to be a brawler. So he gets himself in a lot of trouble, you know, where if he's down in situations, he starts really forcing the ball. He'll roll right and throw left across the field against, like, the Memphis game. He had that terrible interception.
He had two.
He gets himself in trouble by trying to do too much too often. Now, there are a lot of things to like about Rosen as well. I think he's a very accurate quarterback. I think he's got a solid deep ball. I think he's a high floor guy. I don't know necessarily if he's got like a top five NFL quarterback ceiling like some people talk about, but I think mechanically he's very sound. So I kind of like the Eli Manning comp in terms of he's going to do some things that frustrate the hell out of you. But there's certainly a lot to like about Rosen as well.
So basically, Emery told me he needs to add like the pouty face, and then he'll be full Eli. That's all he's missing, is that little pouty. The shoulder shrug that he always does when he does something wrong.
Country dumb, they like
whatever.
To call
we're going
to
come back. Yeah, we're going to come back. We're going to get Emery's favorite quarterback. We're going to get Elliot's favorite quarterback, and then we're going to jump into the running backs. It's the fantasy draft preview for the NFL draft. Don't go anywhere. It is the NFL draft fantasy preview. Jake Seeley with Emery Hunt and Elliot Chris getting you guys ready for the draft coming up next week. Apparently, we'll be more ready because I don't know if you guys just saw this on Twitter, but apparently Hugh Jackson doesn't know the quarterback he would take if he had to take one today. Just more Hugh Jackson for you guys. But Elliot, Emery, it's time. I know your guys' favorite quarterbacks, but I'm going to let you wax poetically. People can see my opinion on the website, so I don't want to waste too much time. Emery, I'm going to let you go first. I know who it's been for basically about the past, year, who your guy is, so go ahead.
It's Lamar Jackson. I mean, from a fantasy perspective, from a real-life perspective, he's the guy that changes the game. And you mean to tell me a guy can throw for 300 yards and rush for 150 yards and score 6 touchdowns total? I want that guy on my team. I want that guy on my fantasy team. I want him on my real football team. To me, that's the one player that really dictates how you cover him, how you defend him. It makes everybody around him better because you're only going to see certain coverages, mostly zone, because you can't play man versus a mobile quarterback, especially one that's as fast as him. You can't really spy him with the linebacker because he's going to outrun him, so you have to sacrifice the safety, which will then make the tight end one-on-one. Receivers get one-on-one coverage. The running game is going to be better because you can't really crash down and defend a run. Got to keep the backside gate closed, and that's where the running game happens. So that's the number one player in this draft. I just find it comical that a guy with this talent, level of production, and consistency and growth over the last 3 seasons is not talked about as being the number one option in this draft.
Oh, no, we got to put him at wide receiver, Emery. Come on now. Look, I know that's ridiculous. You know it's ridiculous. Let's ask the bigger question here. Is he the next Michael Vick? And if so, is he going to break Madden just like Michael Vick did?
This is why it's so funny, because I was in college. We were, you know, playing college ball when Vick was happening, and we actually ended up getting the offensive coordinator from Virginia Tech to be our next head coach. This was happening 2 years down the line, obviously. But at that time, we were like, man, this guy is great. And he was all projection. Because he wasn't the most polished passer. Their offense was 75% power running game and Vic off play action, finding somebody open and scrambling. But you couldn't pass on him at one because you'd never seen a quarterback run a 4-2. You'd never seen a quarterback with that laser of an arm. We're going to figure it out, but we got to take him. With Lamar Jackson, you're getting a more polished version of Michael Vick, a guy that's a more elusive runner that can protect himself so he won't get hurt, and a guy that can throw the football coming out of a pro-style offense at Louisville with that Earhart Perkins offense that he runs with Bobby Petrino. And keep in mind, Petrino, we never got to see what he would have looked like with Michael Vick because Vick went to jail. This is exactly what it would have looked like had Vic and Petrino been able to work together in the league. This is a can't-miss prospect, in my opinion.
All right, Elliot. Well, I know who yours is, and I know that you are also a fan of Lamar Jackson, but Baker Mayfield, I'm going to let you wax poetically on him, but you also in this, tell me why people shouldn't be so concerned about the size, because you see a lot of people out there saying you're worried about having to be forced to play shotgun and RPO and take 5 and 7 step drops because of his height. So tell us why that shouldn't be in the concern of people's minds for fantasy purposes.
Well, I mean, NFL teams the last 3 years on their pass attempts, 88% of the time is shotgun. So, I mean, we're really talking about that over and over and over again. But, you know, I try to remind people when they scout that it's 2018, man. Like, shotgun, spread systems, RPOs, that's what the Eagles just won the Super Bowl with. I mean, getting guys easy reads is a good – it's a good thing. I mean, that's what you want your offense to be. And, you know, Baker Mayfield – had less passes batted down at the line of scrimmage than Sam Darnold or Josh Allen, who are much bigger than he is. And he played behind, Orlando Brown, who's like 6'8", 500 pounds. Like, I don't understand. Every offensive lineman he had was over 6'4". Like, he hasn't had an issue with passes being batted down his entire career. He's, every time people have doubted him, he has stepped up and made plays. I mean, you know, the couple things I really look for are quarterbacks. One is accuracy, and he's the most accurate quarterback in the draft, basically at every single level. And two, how you handle adverse situations. So if you want to talk about what he did off the field, that's incredible. He won the walk-on of the year twice. I think he's the only person to ever do that. It's pretty absurd that he walked on to Texas Tech and Oklahoma and took the starting job right away. Like, that's absurd. But, you know, when he was trailing by 1 to 7 points in his career at Oklahoma, he had a 25 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 142 quarterback rating, and a 70% completion percentage. I think he threw for like 2,300 yards in those attempts. So he is crushed in every single situation. He's got the accuracy. He's got the anticipation. I think he can make the throws to every level. And I think that the size stuff, I mean, the way I always joke about it is, like, I think your girl cares about the extra inch more than I do in terms of the quarterback's height. Like, I'm going to be fine with him being almost 6'1". I mean, I really think that you're making much ado about something that doesn't matter that much.
And the back up his point, right. we saw, you know, I was around the college football landscape when Joe Hamilton was balling out at Georgia Tech in the ACC, and people, you know, just didn't talk about him because he was 5'10". But you just saw him each and every Saturday outgun top quarterbacks in the country, and that's the type of guy that was probably before his time. If you can complete passes, it doesn't matter if you're 5'2 or 6'2. Can the ball get there? That's all I care about.
That's very true. All right, so let's talk about running backs, especially more immediate impact for running backs than when it comes to fantasy specifically. So let's talk about the biggest name at the top of the top. Look, it's cliche at this point, generational talent. Everybody's saying it. It's kind of almost an annoying term at this point. But that all being said, Saquon Barkley, Emery, is he a generational talent? Let's throw that out. Like, is he definitively going to come into the NFL, no matter the team he's on, and be a top 10 running back because of his talent?
Yes, that's easy, because for me, I'm not going to say never, but you find it hard to find guys at 230 with that level of explosiveness and also agility. One guy that had it prior to his knee injury, the first knee injury, was Jamal Lewis at Tennessee. You go back and watch some old Tennessee clips of Jamal Lewis. He was exactly what you saw Barkley do. Now, he wasn't as shifty as Barkley, and he wasn't the receiver Barkley is right now, which makes him a complete player, a guy that can make you miss, a guy that can outrun you, a guy that can also be a threat deep down the field in the passing game. That's the type of player, to me, that changed the ball game. It's not even a question whether or not you're taking a good back. Do we take a good back in the top 10 when there's, you know, backs you can get in round 3 or 4? No, you're taking a touchdown maker. I want all the touchdowns. I want all the sacks. I want all the interceptions first before I worry about anything else.
Yeah, I think with Barkley, the thing that makes him a generational talent is, one, his athleticism, right? He tested as a 99th percentile athlete, and like Emery was mentioning, the speed, the elusiveness, and he picks and chooses his spot for power. But like, as a pure athlete at the running back position, it's really hard to find anyone. I think his one good comp for him is Fred Taylor, and you saw what he was able to do at Florida and Jacksonville. But I think what makes him so special is how developed he is as a receiver. Because, you know, in today's NFL, teams are throwing 64% of the time. So how you impact that area of the game is monumental. And we just saw guys like Kareem Hunt, Alvin Kamara, Christian McCaffrey. These guys all really impacted the game through the air, and I think Barkley can do that. I think you could throw the ball to Barkley 100 times and he'd be fantastic. He can run routes out of the slot. I mean, his wide receiver routes were close to what Kamara ran at Tennessee. I mean, people like to bring up his number of 100-yard games, but ignoring the games that he didn't rush for 100 yards, he scored two or more touchdowns or had over 100 all-purpose yards. So, like, I really think that you're nitpicking basically as good of a prospect as you can ask for in today's NFL in the running back position.
Yeah, there's no question about it. As people already know, I would talk fantasy-wise, I already have him as my number seven player. So it's a player, in non-PPR. PPR is probably right about the same. I think he's going to be – it's the same argument we've seen before. You know, I always laugh at it when people back go to Ezekiel Elliott. And before him, I mean, we could do it year after year with Todd Gurley, Leonard, like down the list. They've never played it down in the NFL. Guess what? No rookies ever played a down in the NFL. That's like the stupidest argument I've ever heard. So speaking of Leonard Fournette, Emery, a lot of people, including myself, I don't know if you do, have Darius Geis as my second running back. And I think he draws a lot of similarities to Leonard Fournette, in addition to being hurt and being a concern with the nagging injuries. What is your opinion on Darius Geis, and is he your number two?
He is actually my number seven back. And Geis, okay. I like as a starter. He's a good starter. But I like the fact that he is able to, you know, have the speed. He can catch the ball, even though he wasn't asked to do it at LSU. You know, he's consistent, but he tends to run into contact at the NFL level,
yep.
At the collegiate level. You got to find ways to make guys miss. And speaking from experience, you don't want to crash into 230 and 40 pound backers and, you know, linemen constantly throughout a game. And he's not the type to, let's say, miss games, but he can miss time within games. And that's still not value of what I would want in a tailback. Now, like I said before, he's still a starter. In my opinion, you could still build your ground game around him, but you're going to have to ask. He's going to have to change a little bit of what he does as far as, like you talked about with Barkley, picking your spots to show power. And I think that can help him, you know, sustain himself throughout of a game and also throughout the season.
I think
it's funny you say that, Emery. In my write, real quick, sorry, Elliot, is my write-up. I'll read it right to you. I say, while he's smoothing his cuts, he'll tighten up and even initiate contact before it's needed. So, Elliot, hearing all this, are you higher than Emery? Are you closer to me? Or are you're worried about the same concerns?
I'm worried about the same concerns. I do have him as my RB2. I think that, one, with fantasy in general, and going back to Barkley for a second, is volume is going to be everything for these running backs. How many touches they get really impact their numbers. So draft position and where these guys go has a huge impact on this. So if Geis is the RB2 off the board, he's probably locked into more volume than some of these other guys later on automatically, which gives him a head start for Barkley and, you know, not from Barkley, but from other guys similar to Barkley. I think Geis's violent running style is a legitimate concern. You know, people love the fact that he runs through people's faces, but that historically gets backs nicked up, and people want to point out to Darius Geis and say that 2016 is the real Geis, not 2017 because he was banged up. But to me, that's part of his game. You have to understand that he's going to miss some time, and he's still a good runner when he's banged up. Like, he can still do things, but he's not the special talent, I think, when he's banged up. His elusiveness, he's got it too. Like, he's got the lateral agility, so if he could learn to pick his spots, I think that'd be really helpful. I do think he's got receiving upside. Where the few reps they gave him, LSU doesn't really pass the ball to running backs. They don't really pass in general. LSU needs to learn that it's 2018, and, you know, power toss, two tight end, one fullback is probably not the
with
way
the quarterback blocking backside. Yeah.
maybe not the best way to score points in today's football game, but I do like his receiving upside. I think that there are legitimate concerns. I think when he's healthy, he's spectacular, but I do have legitimate questions about his health. And some of his pass block want to as well. I mean, that could limit some of his stuff early on. He can do it, but he has some super lazy reps in pass protection.
LSU is still trying to find another Jamarcus Russell to lead blocks out there. You're right, Emery. All right. So the next tier, I've done tiers this year because people all get too hung up. I even said this in the article, too hung up of, like, if I have this running back at four and this one at five, like, why did you have that? Why did it change after the draft? To your point, Elliot, a lot's going to determine where these guys land and what the team thinks of them if they give them their reps. But near the top of my tier here, and I know you like this person as well, Emery, and I'm going to let you talk about extensively about him, is Rashad Penny. But I will throw out, and I'm going to throw out the concern people have. I don't have it, but I'm going to throw it out there because it's the counter argument people will throw out, is that the school has been very productive with running backs throughout the entire career, and we've seen ones not hit, like Pumphrey and his size. Go back to Ronnie Hillman, was hit or miss at times. Heck, the guy in between, I actually have to look up his name again, Adam Muemo. I forget how I even say his last name. I mean, this has always been a very running back productive school, but why can Rashad Penny be one that's not just a product of the system?
First of all, let's give credit to the recruiting that's being done at San Diego State. You know, if you're getting guys that can come in and play well, it's no coincidence. You need good guys, right? But there's a significant difference between a Marshall Faulk, between a Rashad Penny, between Pumphrey, and between these all these other backs that you mentioned. The difference for Penny is the fact that this guy has home run speed. Every time I look up, he's scoring a touchdown. And literally, every time you look up, he's scoring touchdowns. To me, that's the biggest difference between him and Donnell Pumphrey. Pumphrey racked up a lot of carries, a lot of yards, but not a lot of touchdowns. This guy put the ball in the end zone double-digit times last year and also this past season, in addition to returning kicks for touchdowns. You have to be fast to return kickoffs. I return punts. That tells you all you need to know about the speed. You know, punts, you have to be shifty. Kickoffs, you have to be fast. I was not fast, therefore I didn't get many yards, right? So this guy can return kicks, punts for touchdowns. Also, he's a good receiver, and you can give him the volume that you need to be. But and when you have the ability to score touchdowns, your volume probably won't be as high because your team will be playing with the lead. And so I think that's why you take a guy like Penny ahead of anyone else outside of Marshall Faulk coming from San Diego State.
So I think... Elliot? I think with Penny, listen, as a runner, I'm going to have very few things to kind of complain about him. And, you know, I think when people compare players from the same school, I think they're doing too much often. I mean, he's got, what, like 60 pounds on Pumphrey. I don't really think there's any comparison there, you know. Bring it back to Sam Darnold. Everyone's like, well, Mark Sanchez struggled. Well, you know, Mark Sanchez played under a different coach, and you know, just because they both went to USC doesn't necessarily that neither one's going to be successful. So I don't get the small school argument. You see a lot of running backs come from small schools, and I think what he does in terms of his contact balance, his vision, really translates. I think he's got special vision. I would probably put it second in the class behind Royce Freeman, but I really like what he is as a runner. Where I have my issues with him is I think one is he's really bad in pass protection. I saw a lot of really bad reps, which worries me because I disagree a little bit with Emery here that I think he's an adequate receiver. I don't think he's anything special. I think he's more of like a dump off kind of guy, maybe similar to Leonard Fournette last year, where you're not necessarily going to split him out in the slot, get these matchup issues. But to me, I wonder, and Emery, you could probably speak to this better, but one of the things I've talked about is that if you are a very limited blocker, and that's going to be an issue for you, are teams then going to work with you less in the receiving game if you're not great in that area because they kind of see it as you are just kind of pigeonholed into that role? Because that's going to have a huge impact on his fantasy success, right, with PPR being everything. It's really hard if guys don't have that pass-catching ability to have that kind of RB1 upside in fantasy.
It's two ways you could look at it and two ways you could attack it. One, the most important part about blocking is knowing who to block. And you see a lot of running backs tend to struggle with that because the way defensive coordinators disguise blitzes, running backs are like, oh my God, I don't know who to block. And they end up not blocking anybody, and the quarterback gets hit. So blocking is 9 times out of 10. It's all 90% knowing who, 10% effort. And also you can attack it from the other side. Well, okay, if they're going to blitz, and I know this guy is not that good of a blocker, we can block the blitzing backer by not blocking the blitzing backer. They call it a scat call, where you just send the running back out in the flat at either this guy is going to stop blitzing or this guy is going to be wide open. So that's how you can attack it from two ways. But most importantly, he has to know who to block and who to pick up before anything else.
So great insight, as always, from Emery. This is really good. We got to hit a break here, though, real quick on those. And we still have 7 more running backs we're hoping to try to get to, including Emery Hunt special, possibly 2 or 3 Emery Hunt specials to keep these eyes out. Like he was telling everybody about Tariq Cohen last year. Should have paid attention. So going to come back. More running backs in the fantasy draft, NFL draft preview. Don't go there. Welcome back to FST. It is still FST, but it's the NFL Draft Fantasy Special. Myself, Jake Seeley, Emery Hunt, and Elliot Chris, Paul Emery at FST. Plan. Follow Elliot Chris at Elliot Chris 1L. You know me, all in kid, breaking down this special NFL draft for you guys. We're going to come back on Thursday to do wide receivers and tight ends, so make sure you tune into that. You can catch us on Twitter and ask us any additional questions because we're not going to get to everybody. Continue with the running backs here, Emery. All right. My question for you on Nick Chubb is basically this. This guy went from being arguably the next best great prospect. A lot of people were arguing and saying, well, maybe it's some of the school. Todd Gurley was great there, and maybe we were not giving enough credit to what the offense is. And then he looks amazing, but then he gets hurt, and he doesn't look like himself. And he started finally getting close back to that last year, but there's still a lot of hesitancy out there. He still doesn't look quite 100%. Could Nick Chubb mimic Todd Gurley, but just maybe a slower ascension because he's still trying to work his way back to 100%?
Nick Chubb is interesting to me because pre-injury, I threw out the comparison on Twitter that he's like Jonathan Stewart, you know, a shorter, compact, powerful guy, weight room guy with explosive speed. Since the injury, he's become Frank Gore, to where I think in the league he's going to be a yards guy, not a lot of touchdowns. And I think prior to that, when he had the home run hitting speed, you can say, okay, yeah, he's going to be a double-digit touchdown guy. But, you know, that's why I took him away from Jonathan Stewart and pushed him more toward a Frank Gore, a guy that's going to get a lot of carries, a lot of yards, but maybe not a lot of touchdowns.
I think first off, Nick Chubb was so good that we were questioning whether or not Todd Gurley was good or if it was just Jordan. That's how good Nick Chubb was. I think what he's gained a lot of the stuff back, but I don't know if he's gained his acceleration and lateral agility, and that's going to kind of limit some of what he does. Because again, I don't think he's going to be a great pass catcher. He really didn't do much of any of that after his knee injury. He had less than 60 reps this past season pass blocking. I think that he's got great vision, great power. I'm going to harp on that. I think there are a lot of really good runners in this class. And I think Frank Gore's going to go to the Hall of Fame. I think he's Jonathan Stewart in Carolina, not say Oregon, because Stewart at Oregon can catch a lot of passes. I think he's just an overall really, really solid player. I think he'd actually be perfect in Carolina as a compliment to McCaffrey. I think that, you know, he's going to do a lot of good things, but I think some of the hype he's getting for fantasy is unjustified because I'm not sure he's going to take that full-on three-down workhorse role and have that 20-25 touches with catch-up side.
All right, let me ask you another player here real quickly, and I think I don't understand where it came from, and that's Sony Michel. Like, I like Sony Michel a lot. I actually think, similar to what you were saying about Geist, though, I think he can bottle up before contact, and that's going to hurt him at times at the NFL. But the other thing that confused me is everybody's like, oh, he's going to be Alvin Kamara. Well, I think Alvin Kamara is almost twice the pass catcher that Sony Michel. Like, where did that come from that everybody got so super excited about Sony Michel and started saying he was going to be Alvin Kamara out of the blue?
I think I started that when I tweeted out, like, he's going to have – I tweeted this out. I forgot what game it was. Maybe it was the SEC championship game. I said, you know, I can envision a guy like Michel having a Kamara-like impact in the league. And what I was talking about was...
Right, you were saying impact. You were impact. Saying he wasn't Kamara.
Right, yeah. And because the thing is, he can catch the ball. He's a good comp player. He doesn't need much to get rolling. Some guys are volume guys where, you know, after the fifth carry, okay, now I figured out the defense and now I can anticipate. Well, he's a guy that can come in like a Sproles and, you know, be a quick starter. That's why I envision him. As far as his projection, I think he's a solid back. I think he runs a little bit heavy. So I worry – when I say run heavy, I'm talking about heavy-footed. When you talk about guys that do that, they tend to over-exaggerate cuts. And, you know, you're going to plant extra hard. And when you have that amount of force coming down on those ankles, you're liable to sprain an ankle. You're liable to pull something. Or get hurt. He has suffered an injury before at Georgia. I just think he runs a little too tight. You know, he's like that tight, explosive athlete. But he does have really good receiving upside. So I like him as a prospect. He's actually my number three back.
He's my number three back, too.
Elliot.
So okay, I think that the issue is with comps in general, you know, Emery points out he's going to have that kind of role, and that doesn't mean he's going to have that kind of impact. And I think that's the difference. And the other thing is, you know, whenever we get a late round hit, I mean, last year was who's the next Dak Prescott? And the likely answer is there is not a next Dak Prescott, right? Like, in terms of that kind of impact. Well, Michel is, I think he can be a weapon in the receiving game. He didn't catch many passes this past season, but the two previous years, he did a lot of that. I agree with Emery. I don't see this kind of great cutter that people are talking about. I think he's got good contact balance. I think where he wins is with vision and anticipation. And then, you know, at the first level, I think he can go down a little easily. And then once he kind of builds up that head of steam, because I think he's got great acceleration, that's where he becomes a really good back. So I think you add in the receiving. And then the fact is, I see he might be the best pass blocker in the class. He's really good in that area. So I think teams are going to feel very comfortable giving him that third down, quote-unquote, role, the scat back role. And that role is becoming more and more valuable in the NFL and more valuable in fantasy football. So I think there's a lot
of things. Did you read my article? Is that what you did? You read my article? Because the very first thing I say is one of the best pass blockers.
Ain't nobody clicking that link, man.
You're doing more research. Yeah, I know. Check the link. You know. Yeah, you know, right behind me, Emery. Check the link. Hashtag check the link, man. Real quick before we move on, because I want to get to some of the more sleepers. We'll hit Ronald Jones real quick here. And basically what I'm going to ask you is see if you guys agree with this. I said I can see some Lamar Miller in the fact that not necessarily 100% similarities in player to player Lamar Miller, but I think he's going to be best served in the NFL if he stays in that 15 to 20 touch range. I think more than that, he's going to be in trouble, Emery.
I would agree. And, you know, he has the speed that Lamar Miller has. I think that's a really good comp.
Yeah, I think it's much better than Jamal Charles. I think Jamal Charles is just, you know, he's black with dreads and wears 25, and people are like, well, there's it's Jamal easy. Charles. Yeah. But the weird thing, just real quick on Ronald Jones, is that he doesn't catch passes. You know, he didn't really do much of that in high school either. USC took him off the field a lot in third down for Stephen Carr. I have some legitimate concerns with Ronald Jones, but I do think kind of 15 to 20 touches is probably his wheelhouse. Teams probably see him as a complimentary piece more than a workhouse back. And you know, he's 208 pounds. That beating in the NFL he's going to take as a between the tackles runner, because quite frankly that's what he was at USC, is probably going to limit how many touches teams want to get him.
All right, well, I'm going to stick with you here real quick, Elliot, because this is Fantasy Draft Twitter and they seem to be in love with this guy, so I'm going to come to you for this one, and that's John Kelly. So are you one of the people that is going gaga over John Kelly right now?
Oh, yeah. I inject the way John Kelly plays directly into my veins. Like, I love this guy, man. First off, he's my RB4 to kind of throw it out there. And, I've harped on receiving receiving ability. And Kelly's market share is actually higher than Saquon Barkley's in the receiving game. I mean, he caught 37 of 45 targets. He breaks linebackers down in space. He doesn't have long speed at all. He's not a great athlete. But the reason I'm worried less about that is because I don't think he wins with his athleticism. So often we talk about how guys do on their combine, but I don't want to double count anything. You watch him on tape, and he's not necessarily this elusive guy. He doesn't have great speed, but what he has is great contact balance. And he makes you miss your target point, and he can kind of use his balance to break these tackles and make these plays. I mean, through the first 5 weeks of the season, he broke more tackles per touch than any other player and any other running back in college football, which is absurd. Missed tackle rate throughout the season was 4.5, which is a little bit lower than Kamara. So he makes people miss, and he's a great receiver with some power to his game. And so I really like that in a running back. Now, his production fell as the season went on. To me, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that Tennessee quit on Butch Jones after the Alabama game, and you saw that a lot in the way that the whole team played. There weren't really holes for him to run through. He got tackled on 26% of his runs behind the line of scrimmage, and I think that's a huge reason why. And then there's the suspension as well for smoking weed. But as I always joke, if we're going to take guys off our board for smoking weed, we're going to have like 5 guys left in the NFL. So I really think there's a lot to like about John Kelly in today's NFL.
Anything to add to that, Emery?
I'm not really, because he's my RB14. I'm not the big John Kelly fan. My man Elliot is. I think he, you mentioned it. He's an average athlete. And if you're breaking that many tackles a lot, that means teams are beating you to the punch first, which speaks to not having the speed, the athleticism. And if you project better tacklers in the NFL, he's going to be a good comp guy. And I hate to use his name because people will say, well, he had so-and-so amount of yards. But you look at an Alfred Morris, like, he's going to gain yards, but you a Pierre Thomas type guy. Like, okay, yeah, but we need a better guy in there. I think he's best as a comp player at the pro level.
Then let me go to somebody that you like. Sorry, did you have one more thing? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think one of the differences between Emery and I is that, well, there are a lot of differences. He's probably better at this than I am. But no, I just think that the role that Kelly plays is a role that I value tremendously. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to value the pass-catching aspect of a guy's game more than, you know, just between the tackles running because of where the NFL is going today. So that's one of the reasons I'm even higher on Kelly. Now, I just want to make this very clear. He's my RB4 in the draft. He's not my RB4 fantasy because he's going to go probably RB14. He's probably going to go in the fourth or fifth round, and that probably limits some of his fantasy upside depending on where he goes.
So would you take Kelly over Nyheim Hines?
I would. And Hines might be is probably the better receiver. He's a more explosive player. But I like Kelly's ability to make tacklers miss. And, you know, Hines is smaller than Kelly, and he throws his body around like a madman as well. I really like Hines as well. So you're asking me to, you know, pick which child I love more. But but yes, Hines is very high on my list as well.
Yeah, I like. I'm guessing you do too. I like Emery. I like Hines as well, and I especially like the fact that he can line up in the slot and kind of get moved around the field like that.
Yeah, Hines also is still learning how to play tailback. This is his first year as a full time starter at the position, so he has upside still. And he's a world class sprinter. You can't teach speed. I take speed. I'm like Al Davis out here. Like, I'm taking speed.
All right. Well, let me come back. This is the running back I was going to follow up before with and say is somebody who actually I think does what you're saying John Kelly doesn't do, and that's break off the defenders before they're able to make that contact. And because of the cuts when they're trying to tackle him, a lot of times that initial contact, he slips through. And that's somebody I'm pretty sure you're a big fan of. And that's Chase Edmonds there, Emery.
Yeah, we're right here in New York City, Bronx, not too far away, train right away. I don't know what train it is. You know, you guys catch the train. I think when you look at Edmonds and as far as his ability to make you miss and also his ability to rip off the long run and also help out as a receiver brings tremendous value. People will say, oh, he was banged up this year. Yes, that's true. This was his only year being banged up. Otherwise, he would have shattered the FCS rushing record and FBS rushing record, the Ron Dane rushing record, not the Donnell Pumphrey rushing record. So I think that's where you get the value with a Chase Edmonds. And I think his upside is tremendous because he has proven he can dominate, and he did it in the biggest of games. When they played the Army, he played a big role in that one. The Navy game, he had a really good game. And I think he is he's a good kid, number one, and I've seen him get better each and every season.
One question I have for Edmonds is, why did he do the three cone again at his pro day after he set like a historic time at the combine and then he ran it way worse at the pro day? But I mean, he's a shifty guy and catch passes, like Emery said. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'm pretty sure his receiving numbers were pretty ridiculous in college. And I think Edmonds is another guy you're going to look teams. He's probably going to go in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, something like that. And he's going to be able to come in and be a satellite back and be a contributor.
I hope they don't use him in that role, because I had a first round grade on Deion Lewis coming out of Pitt, and that's my comp for Chase Edmonds. This guy has that it factor, but unfortunately, because of how he's built and where he's coming from, they're going to start him off in a Tariq Cohen role, even though it's clear that he's the better back.
All right, let's try and squeeze these last two in here real quick. For about 3 minutes left, I'm going to throw one out there that wasn't even starred on the list, kind of surprise you guys, and get your thoughts to see if the same thing. Now, I'm a Notre Dame fan, so I've seen a lot of this kid. I think Josh Adams was highly beneficial of that offensive line for the Irish. I understand you don't want him once he's got a head of steam going, but my biggest concern, Emery, is that I don't see him having a head of steam, and if you get him before he gets there, he's going down.
Yeah, I just talked about Jordan Howard, and yes, Jordan Howard can run through gaping holes. So can Josh Adams. If you ask him to make a lateral move, done. Second down. And so I think that's exactly what you're getting in Josh Adams. Not to knock the kid, but he's kind of like Ryan Grant in that regard.
Yeah, Adams has great metrics, but I think most of them are offensive line related. I mean, in terms of his yards after contact, it's much easier to break a tackle when you're 6 or 7 yards down the field than when you're 1 yard down the field. And, you know, you run behind McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, you're going to have a lot of huge lanes, and I think that's what he is.
I was watching him like, I know I would be awful. I have no vision as a running back, but I was like, I could even run through these holes. Come on, man. Let's be real here. All right, so last one. I want to make sure I got this in here. You listed Ryan Nall when I emailed you guys, Emery. I had him way down my list, so I want you to speak to him and say, because you didn't tell me. I don't know if you meant that he was just too high or is he a sleeper that people should be paying attention for.
If Ryan Nall was black, they talk about him clearly. Because he's a white running back, you know, people think, oh, that's the fullback.
They're going to throw him to fullback.
He's 6'2", 235, with 4 or 5 speed, and you put him in an offense, he can catch the ball. He ran kicks back at Oregon State. Love the offense they came out of. It was a little bit more of a pro spread at Oregon State. Not as much power as we saw at San Diego State, but they fed him the football, and he was able to produce and rip off big runs. He's a tremendously talented tailback. His question is the injuries. He had these nagging injuries throughout his career. That's something he's going to have to overcome, which probably will limit him to a comp role. But he definitely has good enough game to really check out. He actually is my RB15. I like his game. I like his speed. I like what he brings to the table on all three fronts.
He also tested really well as an athlete.
You want to try to follow that up, Elliot?
No, I'm just going to add in the fact that he tested really well as an athlete. And, you know, the fact that he brought that he's a white running back is hysterical, because
it's true.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. I mean, last year Christian McCaffrey was getting Toby Gerhart comps. I mean, there's not very many white guy running backs, and so people get very worried when they see white guy running backs.
Yeah, and they always try to. In my comp for Christian McCaffrey was Tiki Barber, and people are like, oh no, he's kind of like Gerhart, and it's like
Danny Woodhead.
Yeah. It's like, man, and if they want to use Woodhead should have been a tailback from Jump Street. You know, because he was what? He broke Ron Dane's record at Shadron State. So, Nall is a tremendous player. I'm a big fan of his game.
All right. I'm glad you said it and we did, because that would have really awkward if Elliot said it, not you.
No, I would agree with him because he would have been right. it's the truth.
That's great. You know what it is? Say is like, I, what about some hair? Like Rashad Penny, I definitely love the hair. I will say that. That's a trait that he has that I don't think we talked about.
I hadn't. It's funny. When you see Rashad Penny, you kind of don't know what he looks like. I kind of envision him always wearing that San Diego State helmet everywhere. Like, I don't know what he looks like.
You don't see him without the helmet? You have no idea what he looks like?
I have no idea. He's like a baseball player to me. I have no idea who you are.
That's hilarious.
Except you, Babe Ruth. That's the only Babe Ruth and Griffey. That's it.
Hey, 30 seconds. A name we didn't talk about, you just want to throw out there to go people to research?
Royce Freeman's got terrific vision. I think that's a guy that's a fun guy to watch.
Trenton Cannon out of Virginia State, check him out. And also Larry Rose III out of New Mexico State. Two guys, similar builds, great speed, great home run hitting capability. Could also play in the slot if need be.
There you go. It's FST, the Fantasy Draft Special. Fantasy Best Friends Forever up next. We'll be back Thursday for wide receivers and tight ends. So make sure you come back.